Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. Thanks for being here with us. We've got a pretty darn good show for you today. Pretty darn good. Can I say that? Can I use that harsh language, Darren? That's all right. Okay. Second hour, Father Paul Jerome Keller will be with us and we'll do Ask a Priest. So if you have a question that's appropriate for a Catholic priest, hang on for the second hour and you are welcome to ask it, whether you're Catholic or not. First hour, we welcome back. That's how it feels. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Stephanie Gray Connors, who has been here many, many times, but we have not seen for a while. But now she's got a fantastic new book called My Body for You, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. And that is what we are going to be talking about today, about the human body and how we can, one way to say it would be what Christian faith and the Christian understanding of the human person has to offer a world that has a quite distorted view of what the human body is for. Give us a call if you'd like to talk about any of the pro-life issues in this post-Roe world. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Stephanie Gray Connors, welcome back.
Thank you. It's been too long.
It has been too long, but we're awful glad that you're here and that you have a new book out. Give us a little idea of the genesis of this book. You wanted to take a look at the pro-life issue in a new way because we're in a new world now?
Yeah. You know, after the Supreme Court overturned the Roe v. Wade decision with the Dobbs decision back in June of 2022, things changed dramatically. On one hand, it was an opportunity for great celebration for the pro-life movement. But what happened is the abortion battle has largely moved from a kind of a federal or national level to a state-by-state level. And so some states, like where I live in Florida, have seen increased measures to protect preborn children. Then there are other states like California that have broadened their support and access to abortion. You've got, surprisingly, even states like Ohio just a few months ago, where people voted to change the state constitution so as to have widespread support for abortion, which was very surprising coming from Ohio.
Yep.
And so there really is a need to better equip people to articulate the pro-life message winsomely and persuasively in the debates that are continuing. And to remember, we might have won a battle with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, but we haven't won the war. And so there is still much work to be done.
888-318-7884 is the number. Hey, whether you agree with us or not, we are pro-life people. We don't hide that fact. But we love talking about the issue. So whether you agree with us or not, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884 to discuss the pro-life message in a post-Roe world. Stephanie, it does seem in the United States, it seems quite obvious now, I guess, a year and a half after the Dobbs decision, that abortion, far from calming down, has become a more agitated topic. And there are people winning elections based on the fact that they are willing to advocate for more killing. That seems to have become almost a point of pride. It is a point of pride among many people.
It's certainly very troubling. And on the other hand, although we should rightfully be troubled, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, Satan is threatened by anything which is good, true, and beautiful. So any advancement to protect preborn children is going to be a threat to the father of lies and the prince of darkness. And so there are going to be, you know, movements and people and political pushes to broaden access for abortion or to make that the issue that gets people in positions of power if they're going to be even more pro-abortion than they historically would have spoken out about. There's going to be that. And that's why we have to realize we're in a battle, which is a battle of ideas, but it's also a spiritual battle. And so we need to be prepared to engage in that. But yeah, there's definitely very troubling things going on around us.
888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. So, you know, people are listening all around the world, but I think most people know what Roe versus Wade is around the world here in the United States and what it means. But we just went from a world where no states could really decide this issue for themselves to where each individual state can decide this issue for themselves. And mm-hmm. And so in some ways, the conversations maybe got more local, that we we're not fighting a big federal battle anymore. We're having to have the conversations in our homes, right in our communities, in order to have an influence in our states.
And as things are happening on a state level, where, you know, people's heartstrings are being pulled at, the emotions are being, you know, appealed to with various stories. There was one just a few months ago of a woman in Texas by the name of Kate Cox, who found out halfway through her pregnancy that her baby had trisomy 18. And she wanted to have an abortion. She actually went through legal channels within the state of Texas to try to get access to abortion there, and ultimately couldn't. And then she went out of state to have her abortion. But it was this big dramatic story where she was making claims that she should have access to end her child's life just because her child has a poor prenatal diagnosis, you know, and so it's very troubling to hear things like that. But people feel moved by, you know, stories like hers, where she was also trying to say things like, well, you know, if I have this pregnancy because my first two were C-sections, then I'll have to do a C-section on a baby that's going to die anyways. But then the C-section and continued pregnancy is going to bring a degree of risk to me, although that was never fully elaborated on, because she was willing, if the baby was going to live, to go through with the pregnancy. She was willing to have a C-section if the baby was going to live a long life. So it was just, it was a really disturbing and troubling story. But that's what's happening. We're hearing more stories like that.
Well, our unbiased news media, I think, you know, you could have a thousand stories about children who would not have been alive at all, who are alive now. And maybe people who have come to, you know, whether just people, anybody, men, women, children who have, because the law has changed, have come to the realization that that life is precious, that, you know, that because the law is, as people say, also a teacher, and that people learn from what the law is. You can have a thousand positive stories like that, but our unbiased news media will find the one tragedy or difficult, painful situation. It seems to me almost in an effort to embarrass the pro-life position.
Well, and that's why, as a movement, we need to realize the power of stories and take back stories and use our own narratives. You know, what was it? Rick Santorum, he and his wife actually had a child with trisomy 18, and their daughter has lived for many years. And so he came out in response to that story to be like, look, not all children have an immediate death sentence who have this condition. Even if they did, it doesn't justify ending their lives, because those of us who live longer do not have a right to end the lives of those who live shorter. But having him come out and tell the beautiful story of his daughter, Bella, who I believe even he and his wife have written a book about, you know, stuff like that, we need to be bringing our own positive life-affirming stories into the public square to counteract these negative and troubling stories that others are sharing. And as you say, the broad news media will put a spotlight on.
Well, I mean, just imagine if the news media was biased. I mean, we're lucky that we have such a totally, completely unbiased media. Imagine if the news media was biased, the news we would be getting.
Oh, man.
I don't know why you're laughing at that. I was completely serious. All right. Shall we go to the phones? Well, you know what? I better take a break before I go to the phones. Stephanie Gray Connors is our guest. She has a beautiful new book called My Body for You. And you probably could recognize that if you are a Christian person. You are likely to recognize that as a paraphrase of Jesus's own words about giving his body for us. My Body for You, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. If you'd like to talk with Stephanie, as I said, whether you agree or disagree with what we have to say here, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
What have you always wanted to know about the Vatican? Well, I'm your Vatican insider, and I answer that question when I bring you the news about the Pope, Vatican City, and I share insights and stories from a broad spectrum of church ministries.
Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis, Saturday night, 9 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, one of our favorites. And we don't have favorites around here, but one of our favorites is Stephanie Gray Connors, just as smart as can be and as helpful as can be. And I must say, as courageous as can be in just telling the plain truth about human life and advocating for human lives that are at risk because of our society's callousness towards life. She has a new book called My Body for You, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. And we'd love it if you'd call if you want to talk with Stephanie, 888-318-7884. Stephanie, I'm going to go to the phones unless there's something else you'd like to do before we do that.
No, just as you were talking about all the as can be's, I thought you were going to also say is pregnant as can be, because
I maybe should have mentioned that.
I'm feeling very done.
Yes. Isn't that funny that pregnancy can be modified like that? There really is a state of being very pregnant. Even though everyone who's pregnant is 100% pregnant, there's also a state of being very pregnant.
Yeah, there is. And I have 5.5 weeks left. And everyone who sees me, from strangers to friends, are like, you're due in the next few days, right? And I'm like, no, a few more weeks. More than a month.
And people probably don't know everything about you. They may not know that you are a very fine ukulele player. And that's got to be harder with that baby.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. With the belly sticking out, the ukulele has to stick farther. But the good thing is, it's so small, it's quite easy to maneuver.
But the baby will love music when it's born, having all that ukulele so close.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope
because
so.
Because my dear sweet 2.5-year-old loves the piano, which is good. That was my first instrument, the one I grew up playing and learning. But when I pull out my ukulele, stop, mummy, stop. No more, mummy. It kills me. It's like a dagger to my heart. It's not like it when I play the ukulele.
I could see. I can see how that's a dagger to your heart. But I would think there might be a fairly large minority of the population that has similar feelings about the ukulele. I'm not saying that to offend the ukulele players out there, but I do think there are some people that have a negative. Like, it's just like the harmonica. Some people just, they don't like it. Alan in Charleston, South Carolina, listening on 7:30 a.m. Thank you for the call, Alan. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie Gray Connors.
Thank you, Cy and Stephanie. And Stephanie, first of all, congratulations on this white life you're bringing into the world.
Thank you.
My question is, what is the most effective way to fight the abortion pill in the mail via second and third parties, and the government violating the Comstock law, or the Comstock laws not being enforced?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually something I write about in my book, is after Roe v. Wade was overturned, there was this dark underworld of getting people abortion pill access in states where abortion became illegal, and even down to people coming from Mexico and other places, hiding abortion pills on their body and then getting connected to pro-abortion networks within the U.S. where women will have pill packing parties in their homes. I mean, I read one article about women, you know, someone's family dog was roaming around as they were packing these abortion pills up, and someone was like, oh, well, we're wearing gloves. And the other person was like, yeah, but you just pet the dog with your gloved hand as you're packaging this abortion pill that we're either going to hand deliver or mail deliver. So I think then one way to respond to this is to expose kind of even some of the unsanitary conditions that these pills could be in before people get access to them. One of the things I write about in my book is the unknown of the origins of the pills. You know, they're also coming from India and other places. Do we know if these pills are laced with anything? So this idea that someone could be just mailed some pills from a random person, is a very dangerous thing. And in other circumstances, we'd all usually have alarm bells on about that and be like, oh, I'm not going to risk that. Who knows what it could do to my body? I think the other kind of argument and point we need to make, and again, I draw this out in my book, is that this invites a lot of risk to a woman's health. You know, when women are trying to hide the fact that they're pregnant and hide the fact that they're having an abortion via an abortion pill, and therefore not seek medical attention about their pregnancy, they're perhaps less likely to seek medical attention about pursuing the abortion pill, especially in a state where it's illegal and they found a clandestine way to get access to the pill. And as they then start to lose the baby through this intentional killing through the pill, there are risks that come to them. And I know that from a different experience that's nonetheless got some analogies and similarities, and that is that I've had four miscarriages. And one of the things I write in my book is that I lost all my babies naturally, but the miscarriages were very intense on my body and required constant medical attention. I had doctors doing ultrasounds, making sure I didn't have any retained tissue. I was having my blood checked all the time. And you've got women who are intentionally bringing about what naturally happened to me through miscarriage. They're taking pills that are causing intense bleeding and cramping, but oftentimes then not going to get the medical attention that I got from my natural miscarriages. And this is going to cause a number of potential serious health problems for these women. And so I think that's a point that we need to make in order to rightly scare people as to the risks of entering into such a immoral as well as personally risky choice.
Alan, thank you. I hope that answer was helpful to you. We're talking about a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. That's the subtitle of Stephanie's new book, My Body for You. I hope people will check out the book. Stephanie is very much worth reading whatever she writes, but this is a wonderful new book, which she is now holding up. it's called My Body for You, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. Hey, I want to invite you again if what Stephanie and I profess, and I'll just say whatever Stephanie says, I've never heard her say anything I disagreed with. So I will associate myself with whatever her comments are. But if you disagree with all this, we would love to speak with you about it. And you're very welcome here. And we like having civil conversations about important topics. 888-318-7884. Or if you just want to talk with Stephanie for any other reason, 888-318-7884. We're going now to Marco in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Marco, go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here, Marco. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm a college student here in Grand Rapids, and you know, most of my classes are public health and political science, and often there's talk about women's rights and abortion, and you know, pretty much everyone in the class, including the professors, are pro-choice. And I was just wondering, from a pro-life perspective, how I should go about just attending these courses and being present in the courses without being a detriment to my grade, and you know, without getting backlash from my professor or fellow students.
Yeah, good question. That's always the challenge. You know, the scriptures talk about being wise as a serpent and simple as a dove, and there's always that balance between when we're in moments of controversy, seizing those opportunities to be a light and to be a witness. And then there's always that strategic element. You know, some people, for example, who are trying to get through med school just to become pro-life doctors will never do anything wrong, but sometimes keep their head down. So it's a continual discernment of when to speak, you know, a time to speak and a time to be silent. So the first step then would be prayer, you know, asking the Holy Spirit for wisdom. And then the second step, you know, if there's that strong conviction, I really need to, you know, speak out. If I don't speak out, who will? Type attitude. Then to use the defense that the other side is giving to justify their position, to be curious and to ask some questions. So if they're using the language of women's rights, you know, you could raise your hand and say, you know, I'm curious how one would respond if the argument to justify abortion is women's rights, and 50% of the time, you could say preborn child, you could say fetus or embryo, is a female, what about countries or cultures where there is a preference for a male child, and that preference is so strong that that means there will be abortion or infanticide of female fetuses or infants? How does one justify women's rights if women in the womb are going to have their lives ended, and see how they respond? And that will put these people in a pickle, because this is a reality in places of the world like India and China, and there's a major male-female imbalance as a result of preferring the male child. And yet, if you support women's rights and abortion, then you should support a woman's right to abort because she has a female fetus. And so that's one thing you could do. The other thing you can do is, and I actually am a political science major myself, is when you have assignments, is there an opportunity to write a paper specifically on the abortion issue? So one of my classes was actually, it was a history class, not a poli-sci class, but it was 20th century American history. And I had to write a paper on anything from the 20th century American history. And so I thought, I'm going to write about the origins of Planned Parenthood. And pro-life books are, you know, notorious for citing Margaret Sanger's birth control reviews and quoting from them. And I thought, I'm not even going to use a pro-life source to make the claims within my paper. I'm going to use those sources to tell me what issue of the birth control review they're quoting from. And then I'm going to go to my campus library and find the primary source, the original paper of Margaret Sanger. And so I wrote a whole paper exposing just the terrible eugenics mindset of Sanger. And I ended up getting an A- on it from a very liberal professor because I had good sources to back up my claims. So to seize opportunities also to even just enlighten your professor based on the choices you make about the assignments you choose.
What do you think, Marco?
You know, that's great. I mean, it's really a challenge, you know, going through a university that is so liberal in their approach to, reproductive rights and abortion. So it's hard to deal with this on a daily basis. But you know, I think if I keep praying, like you said, and asking God for wisdom, it will lead me to the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, asking questions is kind of the least offensive strategy that can often be the most effective, because it provokes the other side to defend its claims. So to not just say, hey, I believe in a woman's right to choose, but to have to unpack what that looks like in some very uncomfortable situations. So as you just are curious and you ask questions, that could even cause some doubt on the other side.
Okay,
great.
Marco.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank
yeah,
you.
Thank
God
you.
Bless you and for your bravery and for your determination. And I'm sure there are many praying for you, and we'll pray for you. Thank you, Marco. Our guest is the author of the brand new book. Brand new, came out last summer. My Body for You, a Pro-Life Message for a Pro-Roe World. And Stephanie Gray Connors is that author.
Post-Roe.
Oh, excuse me. What did I say? A pro I knew
Although
I was saying
it is so. Kind of in the post-Roe, people are still pro-Roe. So, I mean, you can change the title of it.
You're not really here until I mess up your book title. That's kind of the rule. Catholic Answers. Until I've messed up the title of your book, you haven't really been on. My Body for You, a Pro-Life Message for a Post-Roe World. You're welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. We go to Joe now in Washington, listening on 107.9 FM. Joe, welcome. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, you just seem really knowledgeable, and I appreciate listening to you, but I was wondering, have you ever heard of a menstrual extraction?
Not exactly, although I have heard of, like, in third world countries, they will often do a very primitive suction type abortion that's manual and done very early. Is that what you're referring to, or maybe?
Okay,
expand?
Well, when I was a lot younger, I'm an old lady now, but when I got older, I worked at the hospital when I was very young, and years after this happened, I was informed that was a type of abortion. I was having really bad cramps and stuff, and so they started my period. It's called a menstrual extraction, and years later you find out you've had an abortion. So it's not
Did you feel you were tricked into an abortion, Joe?
Oh yeah, I had no idea, you know. And like I said,
I'm sorry.
I was in the emergency room. And so years later I found out I'd killed one of my children, and I have 5 kids and 13 grandkids now. So I love children, and it just made me very mentally, abortion just racks your brain until you die. So I appreciate her writing a book and talking about it. And I just wondered if she'd heard about that, because they do, they sneak up on you.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that's terrible. I'm very sorry to hear that. So are you saying that when this occurred, they told you you were having a menstrual extraction? Did they tell you that you had a positive pregnancy test, or had you yourself known of a positive pregnancy test at that point?
No. I was just having really bad, they thought I might be having a gallbladder attack or something. And so they did the extraction. And then, you know, I was feeling bad a few days and my period started. But years later, I was talking to a lady in an abortion clinic, and she said, that's the type of abortion, you were probably pregnant and didn't know it.
Well,
gosh, I mean, certainly if you were pregnant, I mean, that's just horrific that they would act in such a way. I guess the big question is, were you pregnant? Just in terms of your own conscience and
we'll have to continue this in just a second. Sorry, Stephanie. When the resurrected Jesus appeared to disciples on the road to Emmaus, they didn't recognize him until the breaking of the bread. The same is true today. In the Holy Eucharist, we really meet Jesus. In The Eucharist is Really Jesus, author Joe Heschmeyer explains how knowing Jesus in the Eucharist is the key to understanding all of Christian faith. Order your copy of The Eucharist is Really Jesus today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made, and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carlo Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carlo's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll get more meatless Lenten recipe ideas from Rita Heikenfeld, plus news, weather, sports, and more. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you, Joe, for the call. We came right up against the break there, and then we lost Joe at the break. But I hope that the conversation was acceptable to you, Joe. You're welcome to call. Anyone's welcome to call right now. 888-318-7884. If you'd like some help with crafting a pro-life message for a post-Roe world, that's what we're talking about this hour. My Body for You is the new book from our guest, Stephanie Gray Connors. And the phone number, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Just two things to do before I go back to the phones. First of all, to invite you again to come with us on cruise. Catholic Answers Cruise departs Montreal on June 29th and pulls into Boston on July 6th. And we'll visit Quebec and Nova Scotia and lots of places. And we'll have lots of great talks on the coming of Christianity to the New World, as well as just days and days of fellowship and fun and mass together. And we'd love it if you'd come. You just go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com, CatholicAnswersCruise.com. And all of our unsold cabins will go away. So if you'd like to come at the cruise price, the price that we have negotiated with the cruise line, you got to sign up in March. Just go to CatholicAnswersCruise.com to find out all about it. And we will hope to see you there. Now, the second thing to do before we go back to the phones, and the number again is 888-318-7884. We welcome Thomas the TikTok Engine, who gets questions from TikTok, brings them here to the show. We get answers for him, and he takes them back to TikTok to fix the whole world. Welcome, Thomas.
Hi, Si. Thanks for having me back.
And how's it going fixing the whole world?
Slow.
Slow. Yeah, it's kind of a slog.
Slow and not steady. Yeah, just slow, really. But the good news is it doesn't all fall on my shoulders.
Well, I'm glad you're here because I am a huge fan of our guest, Stephanie Gray Connors. And I'm glad that you will be sharing her wisdom with the good people of TikTok.
So
and the
I.
other people of TikTok as well.
Right. The good, the bad, mm-hmm. the ugly, even the Catholic, you know, they'll all see it, right? and so, yeah, thanks, Stephanie, for taking this question. As an aside, I want to mention to the audience that I asked Stephanie one other question on an earlier appearance of hers, and on TikTok it got over 100,000 views. So,
oh, that's great.
She's going places on TikTok, thanks to us. and thanks to her.
This kid is going places, Thomas. She's
yes,
going
she
places.
Absolutely. So, Stephanie, on a different video we posted related to pro-life issues, we were discussing, you know, whether abortion can be forgiven by a priest, and Father Sam Keyes, our chaplain at the time, gave a really good answer. And someone else in the comments of that video wanted to know, what about the case of an ectopic pregnancy? Is that a moral thing to do, have an abortion in that situation?
So first we need to define what an ectopic pregnancy is and what an abortion is. So ectopic simply means out of the uterus, and typically that means in the fallopian tubes, although it can be in other places like the abdomen and so forth. And pregnancy actually begins in the fallopian tube, but in a pregnancy functioning normally, the baby moves within about a week into the uterus and grows for 9 months. But in a, especially a tubal ectopic pregnancy, the baby stays stuck in the tube. The problem with that is that as the baby's growing and developing in that very tiny tube, the tube is going to expand and can eventually burst. With the bursting tube will bring about the death of the child and can bring about the death of the mother. So that's what we're dealing with an ectopic and specifically a tubal ectopic pregnancy. So then we need to define what is abortion. Well, abortion, people will say, is a termination of a pregnancy, but in reality, it's directly and intentionally ending the life of an innocent human being. So the question is it ever ethical to directly and intentionally target an innocent human being for destruction? And I would say no. The reality is, just as it would be wrong to directly and intentionally end the life of an infant, it would be wrong to directly and intentionally end the life of a preborn child. Having said that abortion is not ethical in response to this tubal ectopic pregnancy, there are other things we can do. So an alternative to abortion would be a salpingectomy, which is a surgical procedure where the section of expanding fallopian tube is removed. In that case, you're not targeting the baby's body, you're targeting the mother's body, specifically a pathological condition within her body, a tube that's expanding that shouldn't, that's not designed to expand, that if left alone could kill two people. And so that section of tube is removed. And if we had the technology to transplant the baby somewhere, we absolutely would. We currently lack that technology. And so the baby dies not because we've directly targeted the baby's body for destruction, but because we took a pathological part of the mother that was threatening the baby's life and the mother's life, and we removed it from that hostile environment where it could burst, and we didn't have the technology to then transplant the baby somewhere. There's a difference between not being able to save someone and directly killing someone. So if someone shows up at a hospital with a heart attack and you're too late to be able to save their life, you're not guilty of killing them. But if someone shows up at the hospital with chest pain and then you take a knife and stab them in the heart, clearly you've directly and intentionally ended their life. So the key to remember when a woman's life is in danger is it's always wrong to directly and intentionally end an innocent person's life, but there are alternative interventions we can do with the attempt and desire to try to save both lives.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. Very thorough there for our TikTok audience.
So we're going for 100,000 on that one. That's
at
what we're looking
minimum.
For. All right. Minimum 100,000 for that.
By your own bar, Stephanie.
How long was I? Probably too long. My niece always said you're a big talker, Auntie Steph.
You kept it nice and concise there, and I'll edit you down even shorter if I can.
Well, but being a big talker is kind of your job. So, like,
yeah, you can ask her, how much money do you make, talker?
Yeah. Thanks,
my
Thomas.
My 2.5-year-old is a big talker.
There's
Clearly
a shock.
She gets it from her mom.
There's a shock. All right, the number here is 888-318-7884. Thank you, Thomas, the TikTok engine. We will look at that. We will look for that on TikTok as soon as I learn how to use TikTok. My body for you, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. Stephanie Gray Connors is the author. If you'd like to talk about it, 888-318-7884. I'm going to give you, I'd like to give you a question from YouTube. This one comes from Alina. It actually comes in two parts. So how do we know that conception is when the soul gets created? I don't think it's from scripture, right? Is it from Aquinas? And I hear there's often a miscarriage in early pregnancy that don't even get noticed. So are all those lost souls?
Two great questions. So in terms of the first one, there is a debate theologically as to the precise moment when ensoulment happens. Does it happen in the moment of sperm egg fusion or fertilization or conception, all of that, when the sperm meets the egg? Or is it sometime later within a short window? So within before implantation occurs, as I mentioned previously, when fertilization happens, it happens in the fallopian tube. And as that embryo moves through the tube to implant in the uterus, before implantation, you can have something called twinning, which occurs, where you have one embryo that splits into an identical twin and becomes two embryos, and that those two then implant. That's actually what my mom is. She and my aunt are identical twins. So some people argue that ensoulment doesn't happen until after the point at which twinning could occur because you could get a second body. I'm of the camp of people that argue where there's a body, there is a soul, that the body is, or the soul is directing the growth and development of the body. So where sperm egg fusion happens and you have one embryo, it's natural to conclude that that embryo has a soul. And that if twinning occurs before implantation in those first few days, then when a second body suddenly comes to be, you would immediately have a second soul that God Almighty would indwell within that being. But at the end of the day, because that's a metaphysical question that people debate and you ultimately can't prove tangibly with the physical or the material, then we come to the conclusion, look, we know we have a living body at fertilization. And so therefore, where there's a living body, we ought to legally protect that body, which then in some way relates to your second question about very early miscarriage, where some people might not even take a positive pregnancy test, but they were pregnant and then they start what appears to them to be a period, but would be a very early miscarriage. Or in the cases of my miscarriages, I always knew I was pregnant taking very early pregnancy tests, but lost several of my babies early at around 6 weeks of pregnancy. The reality is those are still losses. Those are still human beings. And there is a baptism of desire. In the case of my husband and I, he baptized each of the losses that we had, even though the bodies were not discernible, there was clearly tissue that was discernible. And so clearly by that action, the desire for the baptism of our children was there. But even if someone didn't know they were pregnant, had they desired baptism for their child, that is clearly known, you know, by our Heavenly Father. And then there's also the attitude of if the parents aren't properly formed, you know, what does God do with these unbaptized children in any case, even if you have two atheist parents that lose a child at the age of one or two, you know, and we want to just entrust those children to the mercy of God and pray for their salvation and their eternal happiness.
Thank you, Alina, for the question. I'm glad we were able to get one on from YouTube, and we'll do the best to continue with that. We got to take a quick break, and then a few on the phone, and I think we've got time for at least one or two more. If you'd like to get in the phone line, 888-318-7884.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
EWTN uses the power of radio to reach people whenever and wherever they're searching for answers to questions about their Catholic faith. EWTN Radio is heard on over 500 domestic and international AM and FM radio affiliates. For a complete list of programs and how to hear EWTN Radio, visit EWTN.com and click radio. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Stephanie Gray Connors, our guest this hour. If you've got pro-life questions, 888-318-7884 is the number to call. Jacob's in Lincoln, Nebraska. Jacob, thank you very much for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie.
Hi. I have seen since the striking down of Roe v. Wade, a lot of states are trying to pass abolitionist laws, just completely abolishing abortion. And some of these laws include punishing the mother. And I was wondering kind of where the Catholic Church stands on the mother being punished by the state,
okay,
by the government for an abortion.
Yeah, great question. In terms of legal punishment, I mean, you're going to get a different opinion based on different Catholics. The Catholic Church is clear that abortion is gravely immoral, without exception, always wrong. But then there's more strategic or legal questions of what should the consequences be for the guilty parties who participate in abortion, which vary from one individual to the next, the abortionist versus the woman versus the boyfriend or husband versus the parents or friend who drive the girl to the clinic. There's different degrees of culpability. So you will get variety in people's views. I will say my position is that I believe we need to be consistent. So since preborn children are innocent human beings and abortion is an act of homicide, which ends those lives, that jail time should be a possible consequence for anyone involved in ending that child's life, the way jail time is a possible consequence for anyone who ends the life of a born child. And yet, even when that happens, there are times when people have ended the lives of born children where they're found to be NCR, not criminally responsible, because of other mitigating factors. Maybe there was a mental illness. Maybe they weren't of sound mind or fully consenting to what they were doing. So all of that would actually need to be discerned on a case-by-case basis. And if someone did not get a legal penalty for being involved in the death of an innocent child, it doesn't mean the death of the innocent child was morally acceptable. It just means their degree of legal guilt could be not as explicit as someone else's. And some people will use that position to instill fear in others and say, oh my gosh, then we can't have such laws at all. But again, we need to get back to, are preborn children human, and are they as human as born children? And then shouldn't we treat them equally if all of us are equal to each other? So the other point I would make, though, is the question of how we ought to treat the various guilty parties involved with abortion is secondary. The first point is to convince people that abortion is immoral and ought to be illegal to begin with. And that's the first step. Then there's all the questions of strategically what should happen on an individual basis for the guilty parties.
Okay, Jacob? No?
Do we... That sounds good. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Oh, very good. Thank you, Jacob. Thanks very much. Going up the street here to Orange County, Dana is in Orange County listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. Welcome back, Dana. Go ahead with your question for... I pushed the wrong button. Hang on. Go ahead with your question for Stephanie. Dana?
Sure. Just based on... Yeah, hi.
Yep. Go ahead.
Am I on?
Yep.
Just based on election results, since Roe versus Wade was overturned... does Stephanie have any opinion on whether the pro-life movement needs to rebrand?
I mean, rebranding has a lot of different connotations to it. I think that there are clear positives that have happened since Roe v. Wade was overturned. So, as you say, we could look just to election results, but there are obvious decreases of abortion in various states where there are children that are now alive who very likely would have been killed if their parents could have accessed abortion as readily post-Dobbs as they could pre-Dobbs. And so I think that alone is a sign that good things have happened and we need to continue, you know, expanding those good things. But at the same time, yes, politically there have been like initiatives like in Ohio and other places where there's more support for abortion. So that just means, I don't know so much if I would say we need to rebrand as we do need to regroup and say, okay, what is the most strategic thing we can do? Realizing even that question is not going to give us one answer. It's like a toolbox. You've got nails, you've got screws, you've got screwdrivers, you've got hammers. And so you have different tools and different parts and they go together and you just have to make sure you use the right tool at the right time to hang up the painting or whatever else you're trying to do. And so we need to say, okay, what is going on in state A? And what do we have to help women in crisis? What already is set up from a pastoral perspective, homes for pregnant women? How many politicians can we rely on to vote the right way? How likely are they to keep fighting if we get an imperfect law? Because often there's an imperfect law before a perfect law. So there has to be a lot of coming together of pro-life minds to work just as hard, if not harder, in a post-Roe world as we did in the Roe world that we were living in, because as I said earlier, we've won a battle, but not the war. So we just have to keep fighting. And we constantly want to ask ourselves, how can I be more effective? Because the goal is to save as many lives in the least amount of time.
What do you think, Dana?
Well, you know, it seems maybe a little bit not going to work. It seems like the pro-choice are the people who are actually banding together and winning elections. Florida is now got a ballot that'll be voted on, which could change Florida's abortion law to being very, very restrictive and pro-life to being completely pro-choice. And it will be, I think, the eighth state to have done so. So I think the rebranding thing actually needs to be taken more seriously. If this was a sports team, everybody would be fired and they would bring in completely new people. And I think we're going down a road of making the same mistake over and over again and listening to ourselves in an echo chamber.
Stephanie?
I mean, again, I would just want to hear specifics of, what you would suggest be done. And again, I think we constantly need to ask ourselves, how do we be more effective? How do we not get another Ohio to occur in places like Florida and other states? But the key is we have to keep fighting. And I think the other thing that we need to remember is because it's now at a state by state level, there is a need to fight within the states, but there should be a federal ban on abortion. And so we should also not lose sight of the need to push for that, which seems like it's off the radar screen entirely, because it doesn't make sense to say rape is legal in one state and illegal in another state. Rape is so wrong and it's so evil and it's so terrible that federally it should be illegal so that you can't get access to such an atrocity in one state, but not in another. It should just not be allowed across the board. So we're kind of being dragged into state by state fights, and we have to respond to those directly. But there needs to be an overall effort to have a federal ban on abortion, as we have a federal ban on rape, as we have a federal ban on homicides in general. You know, if you can't kill a two-year-old in one state, but not kill a two-year-old in another state. It's obviously wrong to kill two-year-olds across the country. So we need to establish that same attitude when it comes to preborn children.
Dana, thank you very much for the question. Thank you, everybody who has called. We can take another call if you'd like to dial now. We'll get you on 888-318-7884. My Body for You, a pro-life message for a post-Roe world. One of the things I don't want to conclude the show without getting to the central call of the book, that you're asking us to reconsider this whole kind of attitude, this modern attitude that we have about our own bodies, as if our bodies were our possessions or our bodies were entertainment equipment or something like that. What are you asking? What's the core thing you're asking for in this book, My Body for You?
Yeah, you know, I think it's to get people to realize that as we hear in the abortion debate, my body, my choice, that's a very selfish, self-interested, self-absorbed attitude. And it ultimately leads to death and is not fulfilling. And that the good, the true, and the beautiful is an attitude that responds to that by saying, my body for you, that my body is for love. I'm made for relationship, for a communion of persons, and to will the good of the other. And as parents, in particular, mothers and fathers, we have a beautiful and profound calling to will the good of our children, which means to nurture, protect, and preserve their lives, using our bodies to do so, not to harm their lives. And so that's why I wanted to use Christ's words, because he gave us the greatest example. He laid down his life so that we could have eternal life. And we need to be willing to lay down our comforts, our conveniences, and so forth, so that our children can continue living in this world. They're already living in our wombs. And for people who maybe, you know, don't come from a faith perspective and have a hard time embracing that, I'll often point to 9/11 and say, who do we celebrate as heroes? As people were running out of the burning, about to collapse buildings, there were some people running in, and those people running in were the first responders. They were firefighters, police, and so forth. And what were they doing? They were living out, this is my body given for you. They were willing to lay their lives down, many of whom actually did, in order to rescue people and get individuals out. And they would run out with people, and then they'd run back in to try to rescue more individuals. And then some of them lost their lives as a result. And we are attracted to that. We say that's heroic. We say that's beautiful. They were willing to put the other ahead of themselves. And so that is what we are called to do as mothers and fathers, whether spiritual or biological, to put the other ahead of the self.
And it does strike me that this is a message that is that I mean, if Dana was talking about rebranding, I don't know if this is rebranding, but it has a power to say to young people in particular, who I do believe have a natural predisposition towards heroism and towards goodness. They want to be good. They want to do even if it's very hard, they want to do the good thing. And that this constant drumbeat of you have rights, you have rights, you have rights, is not as satisfying as you have dignity. You have a high calling, and here's how you how you take up the calling to be fully human and to reach your capacities as a human being.
For sure. I mean, even look at secular, you know, movies and books. They still have often the core of their message is serving others, helping others, right? All the Batman and the Spider-Man and the Superman, all these series about good versus evil and helping others and being willing to sacrifice for others. And that's what's ultimately attractive and what sells, and which is why, you know, whole movie industries are built around that. And when there's been attempts to go woke, really woke with certain films and just try to get certain self-absorbed messages out, usually those have been failing at the box office.
Yeah, because there's something that doesn't jibe with the story that we want told or the story that we want to live. So it does seem to me that in invoking Christ here, you're calling on the person who lived the most perfect life, and you're saying to the people of today, you have that calling too. You can follow him.
Absolutely. And that we can do that in all kinds of ways, but particularly through the most mature stage of adult life and human development, being motherhood or fatherhood, whether that's spiritual or physical, we can especially live that out. And pregnancy, for sure, is one way to do that. But even after you give birth, I can testify, caring for my now 2.5-year-old and this baby that's about to be born, that there's so much of your body and your life that is given up for your child, well beyond them being in your womb. And that's a beautiful thing. And all of us who are thriving today are doing so because of parents who did that for us, mothers and fathers who laid down their lives for us. And we ultimately can't repay our parents the way they sacrificed for us. So the best way to honor their self-sacrifice is to pay it forward to others.
Thank you, Stephanie. My Body for You is the name of Stephanie's latest book, A Pro-Life Message for a Post-Roe World. But you also have the website, loveunleasheslife.com. So will you just say a quick word about that? What happens at loveunleasheslife.com?
Sure. Yeah. So that's my ministry page for my blog, information about my books and different things that I have going on. So if people want a link to the book, of course, you can go to stpaulcenter.com/mybodyforyou, or just go to loveunleasheslife.com and click on books, and you can get information there, as well as go to the blog. And I cover other topics too, like IVF, assisted suicide, and so forth. So if people are interested in the other sanctity of life issues, there's lots of info there.
Stephanie Gray Connors, thank you. I don't know. Are we now not going to see you for another 2 years? Now that you're 5.5 weeks from the next baby?
Well, I know. We'll see how much sleep this baby gives me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you when we see you. And God bless you. We'll keep you in our prayers as you await the next installment in the building up of the Gray Connors family. Hey, next hour, it's Ask a Priest. Go ahead and dial now, 888-318-7884.